I'll have a triple martini with two slices of raw bacon. Use the Lunatic Fringe vodka. They keep a bottle behind the bar for me. And bring my friend Piper here an Irish car bomb.
What's that?
Never mind, just drink it. Now, Piper, how long have you been an intern with us?
It's Skylar. My parents picked the name because...
Skylar, Piper, Scooby-Doo, it doesn't matter. It reminds me of an old Italian proverb. The pig says to the lamb, Happy Easter. And the lamb says, Bah, Fangul, which means you can go... What does that story say to you, Piper?
You don't want to be the lamb at Easter?
Exactamundo. Don't be the lamb. That's how you survive in public radio. Find out what they're eating that day and be something else. Be the thing that eats the other thing. You know, bang on your chest. Be the hunter, not the prey. Come on, do it with me.
I'm not sure. I mean, people are watching us now.
Just do it, Piper. Get in my car. Drive to NPR. Don't wanna be the lamb unless they're eating ham. Oh, that's the way it goes. Time to do the nose. And did I say you could stop?
Sorry.
He's watched Frozen more times than any 13-year-old girl in Connecticut. Colin McEnroe. Oh.
That might be true. They've asked me to leave a few times. If you haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street, that intro will make absolutely no sense to you whatsoever. Or the viral video version of that, but that was Matthew McConaughey and Leo DiCaprio. And probably, I mean, whether you like the film or not, one of the more memorable sequences. One of the few sequences, I think, from movies this year that's already kind of made its way outside the movie into and become a thing, as we say. A meme, a trope. All right, let me tell you about the show. It's our pre-Oscar show. With us is our movie maven, Vivian Nebeto, who's always with us for our pre-Oscar show.
Yay.
Doobie McDowell, I think, making one of her earlier first appearances on our pre-Oscar show because, and Doobie McDowell, by the way, one of the leaders of McDowell Jewett Communications, because she has made the effort to see all 9 Best Picture nominees. And then the man who actually understands the business from Trinity Cine Studio, James Hanley, is here with us. We'd love to hear from you as we go along, too. Is there like a particular moment that you watch the Oscars for or relationship that you have with the Academy Awards? It's an all-Academy Awards show today. So give us a call, 860-275-7266. You can talk to the now famous Skylar Magnoli. She will not bang on her chest while you're talking. 860-275-7266. And you may tweet us at WNPR Colin. All right. That's all the intro we need. There's something that you wanted
to
say? Well,
the listeners don't have the advantage of seeing you. So,
yeah.
But I do want to ask a question, who you're wearing.
I am actually dressed. I learned the word this week for how I dress. It was in New York Magazine or New York Magazine's website. There was a description of something called normcore. N-O-R-M, normcore, N-O-R-M-C-O-R-E, normcore. Look it up. It's basically you dress like you're a tourist somewhere, like, you know, you don't know how to dress, basically. And that's how I dress. And I thought today, because Vivian Nebeto is here and she is by far the most fashionable person who ever appears on the nose.
Wow, thank you.
That maybe I would make a little effort, and then I just thought, screw it. So I'm wearing a hoodie and, like, the shirt I wear every day and some jeans.
We were trying to give the listeners a different illusion,
yeah,
but that's okay.
No, I got to be honest. But I'm so excited that there's a word for how I dress. normcore. I just thought I just dress bad, you know, but now I can describe it somehow. So, you know, we're looking through the ballot here, and we're not going to go, you know, piece by piece through the ballot. I think that would be a little bit tiring. But I'm going to give each one of you sort of an opportunity just to talk about something that you did love, something that you or you know, one either performance or category or something where you kind of got a dog in the fight somehow. You really just do sort of care how it comes out. So, James, I'll let you go first.
Well, one of the things I'm struck by actually in having going through the list of, like, certainly Best Picture nominees is that there are so many interesting films this year for different reasons. Some in sort of cinematic ways, but there's also – to me, something that is really significant in that 12 Years a Slave is to me, the most significant film because it is a difficult film to watch. It's dealing with a difficult subject, but it's made expertly by a brilliant director, I think. And it's something really remarkable. It's that sort of uncomfortable place that Hollywood finds itself sometimes that, you know, there's a feeling about it that, okay, this is addressing a serious social issue. But it's surrounded also by these films that are actually also serious but not serious. And I'm thinking of things like The Wolf of Wall Street and American Hustle, which I think are entertaining, but I'm not sure that really engage the horrible nature of what's going on or what has gone on in the case of American Hustle. I compare that sort of thing that you can go to that. You can go to those movies and see brilliant performances, great directing. And I think particularly in case of Wolf of Wall Street, you know, Martin Scorsese is at the top of his form with the characters and with what he's saying there. But I come back to the seriousness of 12 Years a Slave and feeling that it was really remarkable to sit with an audience and watch that film and actually feel that people were engaging with it from a point of view of, you know, actually seeing what was going on and recognizing who the characters were in the movie. And by that, I mean making you watch things that realize that what went wrong, what went on with slavery was a crime, and that this was criminal behavior that was happening against other human beings. And I think that is so significant. That would be the top of the line for me.
You know, the other thing I'm sort of absorbing more now is the director, the somewhat confusingly named Steve McQueen, the director, is also a painter. I mean, I think he's
yes.
a painter
oh,
or artist
he?
First.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And you know, I mean, this movie, that can go wrong. And I think it did go wrong a little bit when Spielberg adapted The Color of Purple, where there were these kind of painterly scenes
yes.
that didn't really sort of square very well with the content. This time, the way that beauty rams up against ugliness
yes, exactly.
Is really, really incredibly impressive to me.
Yes, and I think that in terms of structure and sort of the skill of the director is in things that, you know, when you're looking at some of the characters, the shots hold on longer than you expect and keep going and keep the audience engaged in a way that is highly, it's uncomfortable, obviously, but it has a visceral reality to it that is really extraordinary. That I think, as you point out, you know, that painter background, that sense of the visual that Steve McQueen has, that he really manages to take on the characters in a different way, and it's such a contrast to the way actually that American Hustle and Wolf of Wall Street are more allied to the short attention span, quick moving, rapid exposition of plot. That this is actually sitting still, and there's one shot of Chiwetel Ejiofor at one point that he is just looking and turning slowly, almost looking at the audience, and it's an impossibly long shot. And it's things like that that are so new and different to me.
All right. Dubi?
I was going to agree with the shot of him hanging when he is almost
yes,
dead.
Absolutely.
That was such a long shot and just, you know, unforgettable.
Yes. Yeah.
I agree with you, James. Of course, I'm going to agree with everything James says because he's James and he knows so much more.
That.
It's usually the way to go.
I second
exactly.
That.
I'd be so sad if 12 Years a Slave did not win for all the reasons you mentioned. I suppose Gravity could win if it's true that many of the Academy voters tend to be people who are more focused on the technical aspects yeah. of movie
the
making.
The term for this year is below the line. That's what that's called.
Right. You know, right.
If you're below the line, you work on part of the technical end. Maybe Gravity's a bigger
right.
movie.
And
you.
I can see why, you know, that might be the case if that's who makes up the majority mm-hmm. of the voters. I thought I just wanted to talk about a couple omissions. I thought when you look at the Best Picture list, I was so surprised Inside Llewyn Davis wasn't nominated.
I
would have swapped out Captain Phillips for Inside Llewyn Davis anytime.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that, yes.
And I think my mother omission is I thought, and Colin knows that I loved the movie Her, and I thought Joaquin Phoenix should have been nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah.
And explain why you love the movie Her. I mean, for example, if 12 Years a Slave didn't get the Academy Award, you'd be happy if Her got it, right?
Yes,
it's not going to happen.
So. It's not going to happen. So I'll say I'd be happy. I've never had a no other movie this year stayed with me the way Her did, and I don't know if it's partly because we're all so aware how rapidly life is changing due to everything happening technologically. Mm-hmm. But it was that. It was the love story. It was debating whether or not could you really fall in love with your operating system. Of course, you say absolutely not. You watch this movie. I was in love with Scarlett Johansson. I wanted to marry that operating system. And I just thought the soundtrack was fantastic. That's another topic we can get into later, which is music. But and I thought Joaquin Phoenix was tremendous.
All right. By the way, if you want to join our conversation, don't be shy. 860-275-7266. I'm especially interested if there's sort of a thing that you watch the Academy Awards for, something that you look forward to every year or something that you're looking forward to this year. Or if you want to just tell us which one of your little cherished darlings you're watching for this year, 860-275-7266. Don't be shy. So Vivian Nabetta, what's on your agenda this year?
I really, really liked, and it's not a Best Picture nomination, but I kind of was a little late, but I watched it this morning. I watched 20 Feet from Stardom, which I thought was absolutely phenomenal. I sat there and I couldn't look away. I couldn't look away. I thought it was, I hope it doesn't sound cheesy, but I thought it was really overdue because you know background singers are there. You know that they serve a purpose. You know that they're important and they're kind of integral to an album. But for somebody to really kind of put a lot of faces to some of those songs that you hear, I just thought it was great. I mean, Darlene Love, I'm kind of obsessed with her now. I know, again, not a Best Picture, but I think that the quality
but
of the storytelling.
It's nominated for Best Documentary. And yeah. I think there's, I mean, and maybe we can even talk about the Best Documentary category in just a second, because not that we've all seen that many of the movies, although James has one of the other sort of highly regarded contenders coming in pretty soon, but to Trinity Cine Studio. But first of all, we should say 20 Feet from Stardom, as has been suggested here, is a documentary about the lives of backup singers, some of the really famous backup singers, mm-hmm. The woman that you hear singing with Mick Jagger in Gimme Shelter, and Darlene Love. And you see them sometimes in the rest of their lives. So you become aware of the fact that Darlene Love, who you know is this kind of iconic backup singer, was cleaning houses at one point. The woman, Claudia is her name, I can't think of her last name, the woman who sang with Jagger, we see her teaching Spanish, towards the end of the thing. I will now make you very envious and say that I saw it at Great Barrington at the film festival up there in late May, and at the end of the film, Darlene Love did come out on stage, and with a little tape track, she sang "Lean on Me" to us, and like went to the parties with us and stuff like that. So that was,
I read that, and I'm very jealous. We had to breathe
the same air as Darlene Love. That was great. But you know, I mean, James, in a way, in the documentary category, there's sort of a problem here because I mean, in the documentary category, you do have. And I suppose you could say the same thing plays out in Best Picture, but it seems to me it plays out more starkly. You have a movie like this, which is a pure act of enjoyment. And, yeah, it also looks at certain kinds of unfairnesses and odd ways that life kind of turns out and things like that. I mean, it's not a completely unserious movie. But then all the other movies or most of the other documentaries are about these gigantic world problems.
Right.
You feel a little frivolous loving the thing that you love so much, right?
It's almost like Hollywood has a sort of special sort of place for these things that is a social conscience. But these films don't get seen widely enough for lots of reasons. One of the fascinating things to me about the backup doing something with the backup singers was that almost sort of trips over into an entertainment realm, obviously. But one of the fascinating things to me is that film uniquely amongst the documentaries plays really well in the dark in a theater, and seeing it and hearing the music and hearing the soundtrack on that is really well done, including sort of figuring out what the actual job of the backup singers is in terms of how they're singing and what they're singing. And actually explaining themselves, it was a very visceral sort of direct connection. And Darlene Love is an incredible spokesperson for that. I mean, she's so self-aware and she's able to express herself. And so you create sort of like an entertainment aura around what is a very good expose of something that you always wondered about. Mm-hmm. Documentaries as a group, though, fascinating. The best of them are really good. I mean, the one we're showing, The Act of Killing, coming up is fascinating. But it's very difficult sometimes to get those documentaries in front of an audience. First of all, the word documentary is not always something. People think of that as a TV thing. They think of it as something maybe they'll watch on VOD or you know they'll watch it on their TVs or their computers. They won't necessarily see it in a theater. But if some of those documentaries can get seen in a theater, I think it's very good because it's a shared experience in a way that is not when you watch it on, you know, like on your cell phone or on the computer. And Hollywood doesn't really It seems to me that documentary is just also ran in terms of the Hollywood occasion of the Oscars kind of thing. There are a few other connections too. I mean, I feel somewhat that way with Best Foreign Film, you know, how that's selected and so on. I think that there are some documentaries out there that can really break through, but they have to be treated right. You have to get them in front of the audience, and that's the tough thing, I can tell you.
You know, it's a great point that you make about watching them with other people, and there is, watching 20 Feet from Stardom. I keep wanting getting 12 Years a Slave and 20 Feet from Stardom mixed up in my mind. But watching 20 Feet from Stardom with a large audience, and there was gradually this kind of emotion building up in the room.
Exactly.
I can imagine.
I watched one. I can't recall the name of it anymore, but it was a documentary about, I think her name is Deborah Peeker, a woman who was placed in jail for killing an incredibly abusive spouse, and about like everything that went wrong for her. I watched that about 3 or 4 years ago up at Great Barrington. Also, it's a film festival audience, so they're a little bit more charged up. But it was amazing. People were noisily weeping for the last 20 minutes. Yeah. I mean, people are just sobbing around you. I mean, it really does kind of make a difference. And I think documentaries can really do that. I want to just sort of just look at one category because it is kind of interesting. There's a lot of interesting nominees there, and it's a kind of a way in to talk about maybe what one of my little darlings is this year. And that's Best Actor. Doobie, you were saying that you wish Joaquin Phoenix were up in that category. Instead, it's Christian Bale from American Hustle, Bruce Dern from Nebraska, Leo DiCaprio from The Wolf of Wall Street, Chiwetel Ejiofor from 12 Years a Slave, and Matthew McConaughey from Dallas Buyers Club. And I know that you've seen all those movies. I saw some of them with you. As we went down the home stretch, Doobie and I and our significant others slash spouses started seeing some of the last, rounding up our last, you know, six or seven of the. So you can't have Joaquin. Do you have a preference in that category?
I mean, I think you have to give Most Improved Player to Matthew McConaughey at the very least if he's not going to get the Oscar. I'm not sure about you guys, but I had never even paid attention to him until about 2 years ago. I just in my mind.
Except negatively.
Really, yes, I had. Right. I just had him in my mind as sort of a pretty boy. Oh, that's true.
I was thinking Us Weekly, him always on the beach.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
No,
yeah, you know, right, sexiest right. man alive, da 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 da. But this, you know, this past year between Dallas Buyers Club and Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, it's been fantastic to watch.
And going back last year into Mud and Bernie and a whole bunch of other performances last year. So maybe you're leading.
So I think he'd be a favorite of mine, but I also thought Chiwetel Ejiofor, 12 Years a Slave, was fantastic as well.
Yeah, Vivian, do you have a favorite in that category?
I think that if I were to guess who was going to win, I'm going to go ahead and say that it's going to be Matthew McConaughey. I'm going to agree with you because he has this, and I refuse to say that word.
The McConaissance?
Oh, God. No, I'm not saying that word.
We are living in the McConaissance.
I can't. I can't go there. I'm having shivers thinking about saying it. But I really think he does have the best chance of winning. I mean, he did. He gave a really great performance. On a side note, I was watching the movie, and the whole time I kept thinking, and I don't really eat red meat, but I was like, I just want a hamburger. I'm like, I just want a hamburger. Oh my God, everyone was so painfully thin. Obviously, I understand why. I mean, it made sense considering the subject matter, but I think it's his. I really do.
After seeing 12 Years a Slave, I walked out and I said to whoever was standing near me, well, that guy's got to win Best Actor. I mean, Chiwetel Ejiofor, they're just. His rendering of the pain, was so incredible. I just and you really do need a great actor in that role to sell the experience. Mm-hmm. Yes. As good a director as McQueen is, the actor really has to convey this.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, I was just in awe of this guy, and I thought, let's end the conversation right now. And I subsequently saw a bunch of other performances, including the one that you guys are talking about. And just to bring up one of my own little darlings, to me, the biggest surprise, the biggest disparity between my expectations and what I saw was Nebraska, which I kind of dragged my feet about going to. You know, I just sort of thought, oh, Alexander Payne's working in black and white, and it's going to be just this stark, pretentious, annoying thing. And instead, it really was one of my favorite movies of the year. It's beautiful and good and smart and uncompromising in certain ways that I'm really admiring of. Mm. And, you know, I don't think Bruce Dern is going to win or anything like that, but that's a heck of a performance.
It really is. Yes, yeah. I agree. And that's something very special. And it does take so many daring chances, and not least of which the style of it being in black and white and its spareness and also the sort of edginess of its characters, really. But Bruce Dern, it really is an amazing performance. That's one of the things that's fascinating to me about Best Actor. I agree about Chiwetel Ejiofor. That's a standout performance, absolutely. But Matthew McConaughey, I think, deserves it. But I have to say, the whole sort of like social media surrounding of it is making me feel like, you know, like it's getting on my nerves a little. But I understand why, but it just, I don't know, it just doesn't get through to me. But Bruce Dern, I think, my goodness, at his age, to be doing a part like that, taking on a part like that, and being willing to do it in, like in black and white and be like a really dislikable character at times, that is really, I mean, that's what acting is all about. And I don't think he would win in the Hollywood universe. He's not going to win. But the fact that it's getting the notice and it is something so special, I think, is an indication of some of the territory we're dealing with here, that there are some really interesting performances and great films, more so than usual.
I wonder if the other thing that may work against McConaughey, and it might work against him if I were voting on this too, is most of the journalism that's kind of followed this movie has suggested that it's not his fault, but the way the character is written, the character of Ron Woodruff, an actual historical person, he's written as this guy who's just bitterly homophobic and gradually grows and changes. And yet what I'm reading pretty persuasively and extensively is that that may not be the case, that he may in fact have been a bisexual man who had not evinced all these homophobic tendencies ever. It's just a better story if he undergoes this change.
I think that's actually the center of the movie, because, I mean, that's why are people homophobes? I mean, why would you bother to be a homophobe unless you had an issue? And that is something that I think the film really addresses. And I think Ron Woodruff is a fascinating character who definitely, Matthew McConaughey's, to me, is expressing that. And I think that's one of the best parts of that. That's the core of that film, I think.
All right, let's grab a little break here. We'd love to hear from you. 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Operators are standing by to take your call. You can also tweet us. People have. I'll read some tweets when we get back. WNPR Colin, that's where to tweet us.
Embarrassing melodrama goes to you. So get on up there and give us a speech.
All right, so we're back. It's our pre-Oscar show. I'll read a few tweets here. Dave Diamond tweets, I love both 12 Years a Slave and Nebraska. Both were just so real, but in vastly different ways. Stephen Wood tweets, honest answer, only with Twitter at hand to read jokes and make jokes about the Oscar telecast. Never paid attention to it before there was Twitter. I think people apply that to a lot of events these days. That's sort of how I feel about the State of the Union address and a whole bunch of other things. I enjoy live tweeting them more than I enjoy watching them. However, as we will be mentioning during our endorsements, I will not be – well, I could probably live tweet the Oscars towards the end, but – many of us have places to be this year, as they say. Love to hear from you all at 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. With us in the studio, Vivian Nebeta, Doobie McDowell, James Hanley, and we're here to do our pre-Oscar show for you. In just a second, I want to talk about sort of one of the moments that always stops me every year, and that is the so-called in memoriam reel that they do, which I think is especially fraught this year. But some of the panelists wanted to go through a couple of other categories here. And so, Vivian, one thing you were talking about is the best supporting. There's two interesting kind of newcomer performances in these best supporting roles. One of them is Bahad Abdi. My Somali accent isn't that great, but he's this complete newcomer, former limo driver, who's nominated in Captain Phillips. And a pretty good performance, too. But in best supporting actress, she's not a newcomer to acting, I don't think, but a new name for most of us. Lupita Nyong'o, I may be saying that incorrectly too, for 12 Years a Slave, and I know you think that's a special performance.
Well, I think that overall it's a particularly interesting year for either like African British or actual African actors. That there's quite a few that are up for awards this year, and as a Ugandan American, special shout out. So I'm very happy about that. but I think with Lupita, I think with her, I mean it was very surprising to me, because it felt like, not that it came out of nowhere. She obviously did go to school. Shout out to Yale, obviously. But that her few minutes in the film has really had a lot of impact, and people who kind of follow, who maybe have not seen the movie, know her because she's become this kind of fashion darling, and she's kind of transcended her film role, and now, you know, she's on the front row with Anna Wintour. I mean, she's become like the new It Girl for, you know, for the few minutes that she was in the film. So, you know, that was certainly very interesting. And again, it's a big year for Africans or people of African descent in film. Mm. So I know that if Lupita wins, which that's what I'm hoping for, I think Kenya's going to just be shut down for days. So.
That's so crazy. See, this is why it's good to have panelists. I didn't know anything about her becoming a fashion It Girl sitting in the front row. I've actually covered...
Because you're so busy with your normal...
My normal... I have actually in my life covered New York runway shows, but it's been a long time.
She's also getting a lot of notice on the Nonstop that's opening this week.
Yes. Yes, with Liam Neeson.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. well, poor Liam Neeson. I mean, obviously. But well, anyway, there's a big interview over the weekend with Liam Neeson where they didn't really ask him any questions about all the really bad movies that he's made over the last few years, but I understand why. So Doobie, you want to talk also? I just in terms of the best supporting actress, I'd love to see her win.
I would too.
It would be great.
I certainly would too.
I think the money is kind of on Jennifer Lawrence right now.
Yeah.
But you never know because she might.
She won best last year. Mm-hmm. She's not quite. I know they're trying to make her a mix between like Sandra Bullock and Meryl Streep in terms of where she's supposed to go. So I think she might get a break this year because you just won.
My dark horse favorite, though, for Best Actress Supporting Role is Sally Hawkins from Blue Jasmine.
Totally. Absolutely.
That was a good movie.
I thought she was tremendous.
It's a wonderful performance. I think it is a performance probably that has not lodged itself in the memory of Academy voters the way that it would need to in order to win there. I mean, there's a lot of ways that category could dart around because also, once again, going back to Nebraska, the June Squibb performance, which a lot of people – I don't think that's the real anchor performance for that thing. I think a lot of performances sell that movie. But I don't think that hers is necessarily the one. In fact, I think it's the closest thing to a slightly over-the-top kind of role in the movie. But there are a lot of people who really like it. But you wanted to say something about Best Actress.
I don't remember what I wanted to say, but I will say that...
Say it right into the microphone.
I'm going to say that while I thought Cate Blanchett was great, and I guess everybody's predicting that she's going to win, my money is on Judi Dench. Mm-hmm. I thought she was fantastic in Philomena, and I thought there were times... Who am I to critique Cate Blanchett's performance? I thought there were times that... I'm not sure overacting is the right word, but yeah. I just thought Judi Dench's performance was so pure and true and carried that movie. And
I think that's a very interesting contrast there, actually, yes, because I think that the truth of that character and her ability to convey that character and the nuances of it was really beautiful. I think Cate Blanchett's performance is like – it's like an almost acting school perfect performance. Mm. It's beautifully done. But to me, at the center of that film was actually Sally Hawkins, because I thought Sally Hawkins showed a sense of vulnerability, her own self-awareness, the fact that she has this sort of intellectual capacity to understand chaos and trouble, yet she keeps on doing it, you know, and like she can't escape it kind of thing. And she reads it very well. Mm. I just love that performance. But... one of the things I think that's interesting about Lupita Nyong'o is that few minutes that she had of real intensity in 12 Years a Slave was just, to me, an incredible virtuoso performance that had a naturalness to it when she's protesting about how she picks more cotton than anybody else, you know, and she's being mistreated, and nobody's respecting her for, you know, she's gotten in trouble for having soap. You know, the one thing that she wants to be is clean. She conveys that with an incredible, powerful intensity. I mean, that's a performance to do that in such a short period. And you know, just mentioning one other thing about that film too. There's a few minutes of the film that are really. It, when what is her name? I'm missing her name. She's sitting.
Audrey Woodard.
Alfre Woodard, yes, I'm sorry. Alfre Woodard has this few minutes on the porch where she's dressed to the nines. She's, you know, the favored slave. She's sitting at the table. She knows and she conveys in every move and every word. She has no power, zero. And yet she's sitting there with all these accoutrements of finery because she's agreed to be exploited. And she's there as kind of like this advisor kind of thing. And yet there's the man she's sleeping with standing just below on the veranda, which shows you the true power relationship. And Alfre Woodard has this ability to convey with looks, just fractional looks. And she's another person. I just think that's another of those spectacular performances this year in a tiny part.
And Alfre Woodard, sorry, I cut you off. No, I was saying Alfre Woodard is always good. I mean, she's been around for a very long time. I don't think I've ever seen her, even in stuff that could have been, she's always great.
And the fact that she's willing to do this in a short part, in a tiny part in this film, was really significant, I think.
What are you going to say about Michael Fassbender?
Michael Fassbender, I thought, was amazing in 12 Years a Slave. And I left the theater thinking, boy, if that guy isn't nominated, he should be.
Well, some of the comments, comment about Alfre Woodard, too, it gets back to a point that I've tried to make in the past, which is not in the Oscars. There are already too many Oscars. But one of the 80 billion different film award series that they have, there should be a category for sort of sub-supporting performances, things that are not even supporting roles, things that are the great 3 or 4 minute performance.
Absolutely. Like I agree with you.
You know, they're just – because those happen all the time, you know, and they are – I actually think in Nebraska
– I was going to say you wrote about the woman in Nebraska. Describe who that is.
There's a woman – I can't even summon her name to mind right now, but she plays the local newspaper editor, and she's the woman, as a young woman back in the high school days, she's the woman who lost Bruce Dern to the woman he wound up marrying, Bruce Dern apparently having been some kind of a prize at that time. And she's not on the screen very much, but there's something about
incredible
little conversation that she has with Will Forte, who does this magnificent job.
It's a veracity, an extraordinary clarity that comes through from that. I agree.
Yeah. There's sometimes are these little tiny performances that you just think should be honored.
Well, can we go back to Cate Blanchett really quickly?
Yeah.
There's something that you said about her performance. I think for me, what I really liked about Blue Jasmine, I think that when you have a film and someone is kind of becoming unhinged, there is this tendency to overdo it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm super crazy. You know what I mean? Go from zero to 60 in 7 seconds.
Yeah.
And what I really liked about her performance, and not that she ever really does anything wrong because she is Cate Blanchett, was that it felt like you could understand it. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't over the top. It was very kind of like, you know, this is happening and then this is happening. And it was very subtle and it felt much more real than if she had just kept going and had just completely exploded.
Yeah,
that for me is what did it.
Yeah, I agree. She's not a histrionic actress. I mean, I agree that part of it. I just felt that in the film I felt that I knew her character quickly. Kind of thing. Whereas to me, the Sally Hawkins was this sort of developing character. That's not to deny all of the virtues of Cate Blanchett's performance, which I agree is a great performance. It's just interesting to me that in that film, which often happens actually in Woody Allen films, interestingly, there's some character in the background who develops that way.
That's true. You're right. She did do a phenomenal job because you wonder, you know, what she's feeling inside after her sister did all the things that she did. And now she's living in your house and she's ruining your life.
Well, this goes back to the William Goldman theory. The screenwriter William Goldman has this whole theory about, which since I absorbed it, I've applied it to so many different films, that the great performance in Rain Man isn't Dustin Hoffman, it's Tom Cruise. The person who has to, as you talk about developing roles,
the person
who has to sell you this,
yes,
the person who has to provide the bridge between the audience and whatever odd thing is going up on the screen and has to make it a reality, that's the hard job. That's the harder job. I mean, you know, Dustin Hoffman can just bring all of his tremendous skills to bear on the mannerisms of Raymond. But Cruise has to make Raymond real for us. And I think that's true of a lot of these kinds of performances. Let me grab a call here from Tom in Unionville. I'm going to do this slowly because there we go. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi, Colin.
Yeah.
Oh, well, anyway, I'm like Doobie. I saw all 9 films this year.
We actually saw them together. It's okay if you say that on the air, Tom.
Oh, that would be great. I didn't see them all together, though. Well, maybe with you, but not. I didn't see them. I saw them all different times. But I have to agree with her and the one on her.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the film at all, but that film was the one that stayed with me the most. because it was creepy, and I'm one of those 60-somethings trying to adapt to this new world and fast stuff that's going on. And I have kids in the 20-somethings who kind of make fun of me, so it's kind of like, you know, that type of thing. But I want to make just two quick comments. Out of all the films, like Wolf of Wall Street, I came out of there feeling like I was high on cocaine. Dallas Buyers Club, I agree with whoever said they wanted a hamburger. And Captain Phillips, I felt lost in the water. Each one of these films affected me in a different way. But I have to admit, Nebraska and 12 Years a Slave, those are the last two I saw because I had heard things about them and I needed to be in the right frame of mind to see them, and especially 12 Years a Slave because it was very hard to get through some of the scenes in that, especially the scenes when they were told to clean up before they were sold into slavery, and then the whippings. And the performance of the guy, I can't think, that was the plantation owner and his wife, and how they treated people were just unbelievable to me. So, but I love Nebraska, and I love Bruce Dern's performance. I don't know what it was, and I loved it in black and white. It just hit me. Those two films were, you know, the ones I, you know, really liked. I love Matthew McConaughey. I liked him in Mud. Last year was my favorite film. And as I do, I write emails to my kids and tell them when I review a film, because I go to films quite a lot.
Apparently.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do about 38 a year in the theater.
All right, Tom. That's a lot, Tom. And Tom, thank you so much for your call. Thanks for chiming in about this. I wanted to leave a little time because we're going to be getting into endorsements and stuff like that pretty soon here. But one of the moments that I don't know whether I look forward to it or not, but it's always a memorable moment. It is the moment where they kind of stop the Academy Awards, and then they kind of just roll this reel of people who left us in the past year. And inevitably, one of the impressions I have is, wow, a lot of really important seminal people die every year. And occasionally somebody dies pretty close to the Oscars. Heath Ledger died, I think, January 22nd a couple of years ago, and then won an Oscar, which gave everybody a chance to talk about them, which usually is not what happens. Usually there's kind of real roles. I don't think I can remember a year when the equivalent of Philip Seymour Hoffman, probably the greatest actor of Generation X, of his generation, died. Shirley Temple, maybe the most popular film performer who ever lived for a brief period of time, has died. And then Harold Ramis, who maybe not quite as titanic a figure, but a guy who really kind of symbolizes what film comedies became for about 10 or 15 years, died very, very close to the Academy Awards. And I kind of wonder how can they deal with that? I mean, it's going to be very unsatisfying to me if I just watch them all go flying by in one of those reels that they do. But that's what they're going to do, right?
If you're the producer, yeah, it would be hard to figure out who you would end on.
Right. Well, I think that actually you could probably, if they took it seriously enough that, say, the first 45 minutes or an hour of the broadcast, they actually took sort of 10-minute long segments to pay attention to these people at greater length than just, you know, sort of playing some music with a couple of scenes, because I think they are significant people. I mean, this isn't the first year, of course, but I mean, somebody like for instance, for people to hear that, oh, Shirley Temple died, for example, that they think, oh, you know, they remember sort of the image kind of thing. But Shirley Temple was extraordinary in the development of popular culture and the what she did at the time and mm-hmm. what she represented. And I think that Philip Seymour Hoffman is somebody that, I mean, I think many of the audience have probably seen him or heard of him in films they haven't seen. You know, that they were films that they heard about, these performances that were really great, but the films were not massive hits that everybody saw. And this would be a chance to really explore his career. I think then you could, you know, you'd give some weight to the Academy mm-hmm. Awards show, I think.
That's
well,
what
I
we'd
think,
like to...
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
That's what we'd like it to be, but the producer is there saying, are we going to give this time to these legends, or are we going to bring out latest It Girl in her amazing dress? So, yeah.
Well, also as a viewer, and it's not to kind of disparage people and the work that they've done, because you do want to see it, but I think it becomes something else when it's kind of throughout the show. Mm-hmm. At least for me, I would know as a viewer, it's something about seeing them all together, because there's always a couple of people you're like, oh my God, that's right, they died. And so having just, it gives you that moment, and then they go to commercial, and then you can kind of like pick yourself up off the floor mm-hmm. and then come back, and then it's the rest of the show. I think it takes it to a different place. Yeah. My guess, I don't know, maybe I think Shirley Temple might be last.
But you've also got Peter O'Toole. Not an insignificant figure in the world of film.
Right.
Roger Ebert, not an insignificant figure in the modern absorption of film. Mm-hmm. And James Gandolfini, just a guy cut way, way short.
Right. I mean, I think that it's really very difficult to – I'm sure the producers are thinking of sort of entertainment values, you know, right. and not sort of spending too long
Right, it's
time
a party. They don't
yeah, you know.
And
yeah.
that's the basic like, thing. It's a kind of commercial party, so mm-hmm. you have to accept that. But – I think that sometimes there may be somebody who speaks who actually can say something significant in a short number of words. They can actually say something about somebody like Philip Seymour Hoffman that actually gets to the essence of it. So I think it is possible to do.
Yeah, and I think – oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I think – I'm sure that there will probably be a few actors there who might win who probably will mention him. My guess would be that he would be mentioned a couple of times throughout the show.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
yes.
People may dedicate their awards to him or whatever.
Right, exactly.
There's also – you know, this huge question about – there's actually some sort of weird chronological cutoff point after which you can't make the reel, and that Harold Ramis may be on the other side of that cutoff point. Uh-huh. There's also a petition being circulated right now. Bill Sencio is tweeting me about this right now, that a woman named Sarah Jones, who died last week while filming a movie in South Georgia, there's people trying to get her added to that reel because, once again, she might not have made the deadline. I don't know. It must be my Irish take on the Oscars that this is really what I want to focus on. The obituaries, basically. We call them the Irish sports pages for a reason. So let's take a quick break here. We'll have a little bit of extra time to endorse, and maybe over the course of endorsing we can bring up a few other, you know, cinematic gems that are worth talking about.
Filling out our office Oscar pool, what will Bill Murray's blood alcohol level be when he presents an award for the first time this year? God, I am so bad at these. Does anybody have a guess? Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me. Our intern, Piper Magnoli, appeared in the intro.
It's Skylar.
Katie Tolarski is our executive producer. The part of Bill Curry was played by Crispin Glover. For show pages, articles, and photos of the Faith Middleton Show staff at last year's Olive Garden After Party, visit our website, WNPR.org. On Monday, the Scramble tackles the best and worst of the weekend. And now, back to Colin.
All right, now time for endorsements. And I'm leaving a little extra time for endorsements because it'll allow us to say some things that we didn't manage to say as we sort of loped through the Oscars. James, I'll let you start out.
Actually, going back to 12 Years a Slave, I was particularly stung reading Richard Brody's column in The New Yorker recently where he said that, well, yes, 12 Years a Slave was going to win Best Picture, but it was really a film that directed itself, you know, and the director just got out of the way, which I thought was grossly unfair and completely wrong. It really is something that I think that Steve McQueen represents a different kind of filmmaking in the sense that he was willing to take on, and he's done this in his other films, he's willing to take on difficult things, difficult subjects, things that are not immediately apparent what they mean, and linger on them and actually have you focus on what's going on. And that's what I meant when I got to when I originally was talking about how 12 Years a Slave makes you face the criminality of what it is to own other human beings and how people behave under those circumstances. But it's a great best director to me would be well deserved in that case. But linked to that, in terms of an endorsement, I picked up the original book, Solomon Northup's account, 12 Years a Slave, which I would recommend incredibly highly to anybody to read that. You see how extraordinarily detailed an observation he made of an absolutely harrowing, horrible experience. He writes in such an eloquent way about the experience, and you can see how it plays out in the movie. But what is fascinating about it is that many of his reflections are even more detailed than in the movie. It's a really extraordinary thing to read as source material, but just in itself a really riveting account that I'm surprised the book has been so obscure, really extraordinary.
Yeah, I read a bunch of it while writing about it, and I share – that. I read today that there is now going to be a Scholastic reissue of it, a new Scholastic version of it being reissued and made available to schools, which I think is sort of a good thing, because one of the things – I think McQueen or somebody like that said in the interviews, one of his regrets is that people don't really know this book at all, and he's amazed that people don't know this book. Yes. So the book's going to get out there, and people will read it. Great endorsement. Yeah. What have you got, Judy?
I would like to endorse the soundtrack to the movie Her, but it apparently is not available. And maybe at some point I heard a cynic saying, oh, they're trying to build up, you know, interest and excitement, and then it will be available. But I thought the music in that movie was absolutely beautiful and haunting. One of the songs is up for best song.
The Moon Song.
The Moon Song. Though I prefer the song Happy by Pharrell Williams. That would be my pick.
Which is not going to win. Let It Go is going to win.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean, Let It Go is taking over the world, basically.
Right.
There's no way
that
they can, you know.
That's right.
Every 13-year-old girl knows how to sing it backwards at this point.
My money's still on Happy. But I will endorse a band that Colin actually introduced me to, which is Lake Street Dive. And we've been listening together to them. They have a new album coming out. They're just terrific. And
the film tie into that would be that
Thank you, because I was searching for a film tie.
Well, Showtime did a documentary, sort of a documentary of a concert called Another Day, Another Time, which was sort of a tribute to the music of Inside Llewyn Davis. And Lake Street Dive, it was impossible to steal the show. There were so many incredible performers in this documentary, which if you can get it on Showtime or find it some other way, it is amazing. But Lake Street Dive, to the extent that you could stop people in their tracks in that storied company, they did a pretty good job.
Thank you.
Vivian, what do you got?
Okay. Well, I'll cheat and just do two. So right now I'm going to take a page from the Jacques Lamar School of Blatant Self-Promotion and just endorse my new endeavor. I have a small little company called – it's an online business called omusono.com, O-M-U-S-O-N-O. And you can get accessories and jewelry and all these fun things. And I go live this weekend. So – there you go.
Ooh. Wow.
Yes. But the one thing I do want to endorse that is Oscar-related is Lupita. I know I said it before, but I'm Team Lupita.
Well, if you if you spent more time with Vivian Nabetta, you'd want to look like her. So I would think maybe Omusono would be a good place to go to get that process started. I mean, it's not going to happen, but it's sort of, you know, but you could try. All right. Well, I quickly want to, and I know Doobie wants to join me with join in this with me, want to endorse going to the Red Carpet Experience, and I'll make sure you get to the thing about the Kate, too. But the Red Carpet Experience, this is a party that under other names, Peter Shapiro and I started either 15 or 20 years ago. We can't remember anymore. It's been a really long time. And we actually did our first few editions of it in Trinity Cine Studio, and then we've moved it out into the world, and it's been taken over by a wonderful organization since then. We did it as, from the year one, we did it as a benefit for AIDS shelters. There was no overarching organization at the time, but there is now. And so it's now called the Red Carpet Experience. It's going to be at Spotlight Theaters, the beautiful new Spotlight Theaters down by Front Street this year. There's food, there's drink, there's all kinds of stuff, and the telecast will be shown inside one of the, you know, swankily appointed new Spotlight theater things. Parking, I know this is such a concern to people. Parking is free. We've got free parking for you in the Front Street garages. So you just go up, go west on Arch Street, take a right into the sort of backside of the Front Street area, and there's that garage there. You can self-park for free, and I think there'll be valet parking that will be free except for a tip or something like that. And so anyway, it's and tickets are $50 a person. You can go to the – that starts at 7 that whole night. People dress up in costumes and for movies, or do they just wear outrageous attire or formal attire? And VIP admission is $100. That means you get to go to another thing that's at 6 o'clock with even, you know, more exciting food. The food's always really good at this thing, though. So, you know, it's a really great thing, and it does go to support the primary agency that helps fight and deal with the consequences of AIDS. So it's an important thing to do. So get your tickets, or you can buy them there, I guess, but you might have to wait in line or something. Oh, so the online ticket sales close off at 7 p.m., I think, or 8 p.m. on Saturday night. I will post a link on our website at WNPR.org to show you how to buy those tickets, but don't miss them. And I know, Kate, there's another thing at the
camp. Right. Also Sunday night, the Katharine Hepburn Cultural Arts Center is having an Oscar night, and it is co-hosted by Ann Nyberg of Channel 8 and Kristen Roberts of Comcast. come in costume. They would love that. If you Google the Kate, you'll be able to get tickets. But that's also a good Shoreline option for those of you who want to go out on Oscar night.
Last thing, really, really quickly. See The Great Beauty. I saw it at James's Theater. It's at Real Art Ways this weekend. It's out at the Bantam Cinemas, too. It's going to win the Best Picture for Best Foreign Film.
I'm Kyahn Wolf, and no matter who wins at the Academy Awards on Sunday night, we all know who the real winner is. Quentin Tarantino's coke dealer.